Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
There's a new survey being launched just actually in the past couple of minutes. It's the results of the National Inpatient Experience Survey, looking at people's experience of being in hospital throughout 2021. It's been launched by the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, and it finds that patients overall have a good experience of care in hospitals during the pandemic. But sure, look, hardly surprising, the long waiting lists in the emergency department, that remains the problem. 53106 is the number if you want to share your own experience with us. Mary is on the line. Mary, what's your experience of being a patient? Because you're currently being treated for cancer in hospital, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer in the middle of August last year, and I started chemotherapy back in October. So I had 5 months chemotherapy from October up until the end of February, and then I had surgery back in March, and I'm just currently undergoing radiotherapy at the moment.
Okay.
And during the time that I've had my chemotherapy, obviously my immune system is quite low, so I ended up in hospital just a couple of times, just for a few stays. Just, you know, I caught like various bugs and stuff that probably I would have normally wouldn't have been susceptible to, but because my immune system was kind of low, I was kept in then for a few days.
And what's your experience, Mary? Because you've obviously been in and out, you know what I mean, over the last couple of months. Like, how would you describe your inpatient experience of the country's hospitals?
So, like, particularly, I mean, I think we all know that when you're going through A&E or whatever, it's obviously, you were saying there, it's always a bit of a nightmare. But in terms of, I suppose, the experience I was going to talk about today was really my experience getting the chemotherapy in the hospital that I went to. So from October to December, I was in every 2 weeks. So there was a bit of a gap. You'd normally go in about 9:30, 10 in the morning. I was getting the voluntary driver service at the Irish Cancer Society, which was a wonderful service. Okay. So I was being brought into the hospital, and then the driver would kind of wait around, and then he or she collect me at the end of the day. So a normal day, like on a good day, you'd be in at 9:30, 10, you'd be out of there maybe, let's say, 2 or 3 o'clock, home by 4 or 5. But it got kind of particularly bad January, February, and I noticed that. But maybe it's because I was in every week and I was kind of in there so much more regularly, I was kind of noticing it. But also I was in a different type of chemotherapy in January and February, which was just took a bit longer to administer. But there was one particular day, and there was a few days, which was just a disaster. Like, I was there, I went in at 9:30, and by 5:30, I was still waiting to go into the chemo ward. And I wasn't alone. There would have been 5 or 6 other women on that particular day with me. And when we went in that day, everyone was obviously up in arms, you know, you're waiting around, mm-hmm. you're just wondering what's going on. And the head of the chemo ward actually said, look, you need to complain. Like, if patients don't start complaining, nothing's going to change. So I wrote an email, and I think some of the other girls did as well. And in fairness, the hospital did send out a letter a couple of weeks later, and they, you know, they spoke about that they know it's a major issue. They said there's been 100% increase in patients since the centre was opened. Obviously, COVID's had an impact in terms of staff being off sick, and then staff shortages. And also, you know, if you go into the chemo ward, there's a certain amount of chairs that you sit down on, and they've had to space those out because of social distancing. So,
yeah.
You know, there is a whole heap of reasons why you have a long wait, and they're like looking at ways to address that, you know, potentially expanding the service, expanding the physical space, expanding the nursing team, maybe extending the opening hours, obviously trying to get more staff in. But the one that I thought was the best suggestion was kind of removing some of the treatments from the day centre and putting those out into community team services. Because I used to travel in from Ballance and Kildare every week. But, you know, if I had been able, for example, to go to Naas for my treatment, hopefully I would have been seen quicker, mm-hmm. and then I wouldn't have been taking up the space in Dublin for Dublin patients. But yeah, so I mean, it's very, very difficult to be getting chemo every week or every 2 weeks, but to be left waiting for, you know, potentially sometimes 10 hours and you're just wondering what the hell is going on.
I know, and you're probably afraid to leave, Mary, then you're probably afraid to even get up out of your chair in
I used to joke with one of the girls, like, that one of the other patients, that you'd be afraid to go to the toilet almost. You know, you'd be like, I go to the toilet now and if someone calls my name, because I was always a bit unsure as to how it worked in terms of, is it first come, first serve? But then obviously it wasn't, because you'd be in at 9:30, 10 and you wouldn't be, you'd still be there at 5 o'clock. You know, like I was there one day and I just especially thought it was terrible for, you know, the likes of elderly patients and who are kept waiting and they're trying to get their cancer treatment. And then there's people of all ages, all diagnoses, you know, thankfully my my cancer is caught quite early, but, you know, there's people there that are on stage four, you know, they're waiting around for 10 hours on a hospital. You know, it's not all the time, it's not always 10 hours, but, you know, that's on a few occasions it was. And yeah, you just feel like maybe some people should be given priority. But anyway, this one particular day, there was an elderly man there, and he, you know, he'd been there for a good while, and then someone came down to him and said, are you still waiting? And he said, oh, yeah. And they were like, have you had a cup of tea or a sandwich? And he said, oh, I'm afraid to go get anything in case they call my name. So, you know, there's people who are afraid to even go get a cup of tea in case they, you know, get completely lost in the system or, yeah. So just a bit of a mess, I think.
Mary, Paul is joining us as well. Paul, what's your experience?
I'm very good, really, but I do think the outpatients, when I have to say I had cancer twice and I go every 3 months for a checkup, but I could be there for hours. I get there early in the morning and I'm waiting and waiting. And what's more frustrating is that if, when you first go there, they'll take a sample of your blood and then you wait and wait and wait. And eventually they'll see you, and I'm in the waiting room or the surgery or whatever you want to call the cubicle for no more than 5 minutes, and they say, no problem, Paul, your blood's fine. We'll see you in 3 months' time. And what annoys me is the hospital, Port Jungla, is only 5 minutes away from me. I don't know why I can't get the bloods taken there. Let them go to Galway, and they can say, nothing wrong, stay where you are. And if there is a problem, come and visit us. Just wasting everyone's time.
So just more joined up thinking, Paul.
Yeah. Just and even when I was in Port Jungla, and what did surprise me, that hospital has to wait for the information from Galway of my what I've been taking, what chemotherapy I've had, etc. And they can't access. And only one doctor there, who I know from Galway, said, hello, Paul, how are you doing? And it says, we're going to try and get your records now to see what's happening. But other than that, I get served very quickly, you know. Yeah. I had COVID. I went straight into isolation. Then I eventually went into a ward. The food was fantastic. I mean, really okay. Good choice of, you know, no problems at all. And I take the view, if you need the treatment, they'll give it to you.
It's funny you mentioned the food. Mary, I don't know what your experience has been, because usually the food in the hospital is the one area that's always, you know, a common topic for discussion on the text line whenever we talk about hospital experience.
Yeah, I mean, I was hospitalised twice during my treatment, but actually it was fine. And I just want to kind of get that point across that Paul was saying there, like the level of care that I've got throughout my treatment from nurses, surgeons, oncologists has been brilliant, and especially the nurses in the chemo ward. I mean, they're absolute, you know, angels in a really, really dark time in your life. So, you know, I think they're just stuck in a system that's broken. But I mean, the level of care you actually get is really wonderful. It's just the kind of systems around it in terms of the waiting times, which is very frustrating for patients. But I mean, yeah, in terms of the food, I never had any kind of issues with that.
Well, you that's all
you're not expecting a Michelin star, obviously.
No,
but definitely
not.
Yeah,
53106 is the number if you want to share your own in-hospital care experience with us today. Good or bad, whatever. Because to be fair, like the survey has found that 83% of people say that their experience of hospital care was either good or very good. So in the main, it's all quite positive. Alwyn is on the line as well. Tell us your experience, Alwyn.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Well, I'm the mother of a little girl who ends up in hospital rather a lot and has done since she was two. She's five at the moment. I'm going to start off by saying that the care that she has received from nurses, doctors, the women that come and bring the food every day, the play therapists, it's second to none. They are remarkable people, but they are operating a system on a will you do me a favour basis. The length that they have to go to. Hello?
Oh, I can hear you perfectly, Alwyn. Yeah.
The length that they go to get things done is dumbfounding. Like, our experience spans pre-COVID, COVID, and now the most recent visit was last week. So pre-COVID, you could deal with the queues in A&E. Nobody really knows what's wrong with our daughter. They know there's something wrong with her. She saw an immunologist in 2019 who said that if her bouts of fever continued, that we should come back and see him. And she had 42 GP visits between December 2019 and June 2020.
Did you say 42? Sorry, Alwyn.
42. Yes, right. I did say 42. And I kept asking for the consultant, the immunologist, to be phoned and to make an appointment. But that wasn't done. And then COVID did hit, and then it became an impossible. It was just impossible to see a GP. She'd get sick and she wasn't in the community. She was at home with us. So it wasn't viral. They used to say, oh, she's in crash, it's viral, don't worry about it. But her condition deteriorated. Like, since she's been two, the periods of fever get longer. There's nil focus for them. There is no reason for them. They just don't know what it is. So, but the GP didn't know what it was. So you'd imagine they would have put in a call to an immunologist who might know what it is. So that never happened. And then COVID hit. Not a chance of getting your kid seen by a GP. You'd get a call to say that the doctor would be willing to do a video conference a week from the day that you phoned. But kids are immediately ill when they're ill. A week later is no good to anybody. So they'd pawn you off and they'd send you into A&E. So you'd end up in A&E. You know, we've had some really hairy experiences in the A&E during COVID where, you know, we went in, I was sent home saying that she's fine. You get a call 10 minutes out the road to say you have to come back in. Your child is seriously ill. She needs to be hospitalized. Do not go through the A&E department. Just follow the green line and you'll come back to where you were seen. And this was after 7 hours of waiting anyway.
Mm.
And then you're stopped by security to say you need to go to triage. The triage shift has changed, so they don't realize you were there before. They won't let you through. The doctor that ordered you to come back is gone off shift, and then the blood tests have to be taken again. You have to go through the whole process.
There's the whole motion again, and it's funny, that's one of the main points, I suppose, in the survey as well, Alwyn, you know, that the long waiting times in emergency department, that certainly remains a problem. Look, I hope you get sorted, and I hope your daughter you know, gets seen to, and that happens for you, because you can hear the frustration, Alwyn, in your voice. It's obviously gone on a long period of time. I think we have another caller. Is Alan actually with us as well? Alan, what's your experience?
Hi, Andrea. My experience, I had a sports injury, had a damaged finger from hitting a ball. And I went to my GP and he told me that he suspected there was a fracture. So he asked me if I had private insurance. I had. So he said, will you go to a certain private hospital? They have a walk-in A&E, and you'll be seen very quickly. They'll do an X-ray and they'll tell you how it is. So I said, fine. So I went to this hospital. I was there at 9 o'clock, and then I discovered the A&E didn't open until 10 o'clock. So I hung around until 10. I went upstairs and joined the queue and got to the top of the queue, and it said, have you got your appointment? And I said, no, an appointment. I said, my GP told me it was a walk-in. So they said, oh, no, it's not anymore. It used to be. So, but we'll see you anyway. So can you just sit and wait? So I waited. I waited an hour and a half. Eventually, a triage nurse saw me. She looked at it. She said, oh, this is quite simple. We get an X-ray done and you'll be seen. And so I went back out again to wait. And another hour went by. And eventually, I was shown into a cubicle. And I sat there waiting and waiting. No one came near me. So eventually, I pulled the curtain across, and a nurse came to me, and I explained, and she said, "Oh, hang on," and eventually the A&E specialist came in and told me go downstairs and get an x-ray. I went downstairs to get an x-ray. I had to wait there another 3/4 of an hour. In the meantime, I was due to pick up a grandchild from school. So I told her, look, I can't wait. I can't get the x-ray. I'll have to. But she said, you have to. So I said, no, no, I'll have to come back tomorrow. I have to pick up a grandchild. I was there and there 4.5 hours I was there waiting, you know. Eventually, I walked out of the place very frustrated. You know, I went home. Next morning, I had a bill in the post, €180 for going through A&E and €120 for an x-ray that I didn't get. €300. So right. I was really very angry at this stage. I rang the hospital and they said, oh, hang on a second, we'll just check. They were gone 10 or 15 minutes. They came back and they apologized and said, oh, no, you shouldn't have got that bill, you know. So a neighbor then told me that about a sports clinic in town attached to one of the major hospitals. So I went in there. It was a walk-in. I paid €75. I had an x-ray done. Doctor saw me. He told me, yes, you have a fracture. I then I had 3 or 4 more appointments in the main hospital after that and got x-rays. I also saw a physiotherapist after the last appointment. I did, and that's all I paid, €75 for all of that. Didn't have to pay anything else, whereas this private hospital was looking for €300.
Right.
So
you got patched up anyway.
I got patched up anyway. Yeah,
okay. So. Look, I know, Alan, it's, you know, there's so many more stories like your own coming in from people as well here today on the text line. I don't know, is there a better way to run the system or how maybe we just keep going as it is? You could argue 83% say they're happy enough. 83% say that they're happy with the care, describing it as good or very good from their inpatient services. But when you listen to Alan and Alwyn and others and more texts coming in here too, this listener says, nurse is doing their best. I was in A&E for 14 hours with suspected appendicitis. The nurse's time is often being wasted by non-emergencies. Another listener says, my dad recently passed away of cancer 6 weeks ago, battled lung cancer for 17 months. He had an appointment for 10 o'clock one morning to go and get the blood samples, didn't get seen until 7 that night. Was left sitting in a room with other cancer patients, all worried out of their minds. He also collapsed at home one day after receiving heavy chemotherapy. We rang for help and we were told he'd go to A&E with type 4 cancer and appointments cancelled all of the time. It's been going on with people as well, even beyond COVID. Absolutely driving me crazy, says this listener. Keep those experiences coming into us. You can email us. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com or text us either in 53106. Alan, thank you, Alwyn, as well, for joining us, for sharing your experience with us, Mary and Paul there too.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Avant Money.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.